Chapter 10, 28 July 1932. Joey had no idea how to go about earning money, but he knew he could follow his father's example, perhaps even refine his ideas on how to fill the larder. When the food was all gone, he and Lizzie did what they always had, waited until the day's work on the farm was finished and Mr. Bender was safely back in his own house. Then, equipped with garden fork and a sack, they went to his potato fields. He grew potatoes for the market, but it was early in the season, and they were very small. Joey started digging in the middle of a row, well away from the gate. It took several plants to provide enough for a few days. Lizzie buried the tops, carefully smoothing the soil over them, and transplanting a weed or two to make it seem that was all that had ever grown there. Then they went on to a smaller field, in which Leo Bender had sown a row or two each of onions, carrots, lettuce, beetroot, peas, and runner beans for his own use. "There's so much," Lizzie breathed. "More than one family could possibly eat. We'll help them. Just look at this spinach." "We don't want any of that," Joey said. "Can't stand the stuff." They were picking stick beans, and neither noticed Nick until he spoke. "Caught you red-handed this time." Nick was now 16 and as tall as a full-grown man. He grinned as he opened the gate. "When Dad complains about you helping yourselves, Mum tries to tell him he's imagining it."
"He hasn't sent you?"
Lizzie asked anxiously. "Tatty sent me to get some parsley."
"You won't say you've seen us?"
"Course not. Only makes Dad worse. He's already mad at you." "Parsley's up the other end," Joey said slowly. "Would you like to see my new ferret?"
"It's lovely," Lizzie added.
"Is it just a pet?"
"No, it's for catching rabbits."
"Where'd you get it?"
"Bought it from a lad at school. It bit him, and his hand went septic, so his mam made him get rid of it. His family was sick of rabbit anyway."
"Does it really catch them?"
"Yes."
"How many have you caught?"
"I only got it today. I thought I'd try it tonight."
"Bet you won't catch anything."
"Bet you I will. Billy says it's guaranteed. Come and see."
"You're just a couple of kids," Nick said loftily. "You wouldn't know what to do."
"We do, then. Come and see."
"I might for a little while. Hang on a minute while I pop this parsley into Tatty."
"Isn't it your supper time?" Lizzie asked.
"I've had it. Guests for dinner tonight, so I had mine in the kitchen with Tatty."
They went on to the gatehouse, where Lizzie went inside to put the vegetables in the pantry. Maisie straightened up guiltily when she caught sight of Nick hovering in the doorway.
"What's he doing here?"
Her manner was anything but welcoming.
"Can I come in? I've come to see Joey's ferret."
Nick peered in.
"Of course," Lizzie said. "I'm always in your house."
Maisie retreated to the fire.
"It's a vicious thing, Joey, and it'll need feeding. Don't know why you want to bring it here."
"It's out in the back," he said awkwardly, leading the way. Outside, in what had once been a garden, a cold water tap had been fitted against the perimeter wall. Alongside it, a rabbit hutch was raised on four bricks.
"Have to be careful in case it nips me," Joey said. "I'll get the sacks." "The Parrys used to have a ferret. Harry used to put it inside his coat."
"He wouldn't put this one there." While Joey held the sack at the ready, Lizzie cautiously opened the door of the cage. The ferret, an attractive bundle of honey-coloured fur, crouched at the back, and she had to push a stick through the wire netting to urge it forward.
"That's it. Got it."
Joey swiftly closed the sack and slung it over his shoulder.
"I hardly saw it," Nick complained.
"It's not for looking at. You'll see what it can do. Bring a couple more sacks, Lizzie. Do you know a good burrow?"
"No," Nick said. "You said we could try the one in the park again," Lizzie said.
"You're sure your dad's in the house?"
"Certain." Joey led the way in guilty rushes, trying Red Indian style to keep cover between them and Yarrow Hall.
"We ought to wait till it's darker," he worried. "Don't want to be seen. It takes ages to get dark at this time of the year, and I'll get into trouble if I stay out late."
Joey straightened up in surprise. "We stay out as late as we like."
"Come on, let's get on with it," Nick said impatiently. "Dad will be having a bath now, getting ready for his visitors. Are you having me on about this ferret?"
"No, I saw Harry Parry's ferret catch rabbits in this burrow, but it was a long time ago. I think there's more here now."
"What are you doing?"
"Have to block up all the exits but two before we do anything. Help kick this soil back in, Nick, and over there, too. Then Lizzie will put the ferret down the burrow and will catch the rabbits when it chases them out." Already they could hear a snarling and scurrying underground, and the grass seemed to tremble.
"Here they come!"
Lizzie screamed excitedly as she ran to join the others at the outlet. The first rabbit burst out and into Joey's sack, an instant later, surprising all of them.
"Another sack!" Joey screamed, forgetting the need for caution as he grappled to tie the top of the gyrating sack.
They weren't fast enough. The second rabbit escaped from the burrow before either Nick or Lizzie had the second sack in position. Nick went careering after it, screaming with delight. The fever of the chase was on him, but the rabbit was gone in an instant. Lizzie caught the next, and Joey was tying the sack on another when Nick came back.
"Gosh, this is good fun."
Two more escaped from the burrow because they weren't quick enough, but Nick caught two in the last sack, while Joey netted his ferret again.
"That's all, then," he said regretfully when it was quiet again.
Joey then stunned the rabbits he'd caught by banging each sack in turn against a tree trunk.
"Good, a big buck rabbit, not old," he enthused.
Taking out a piece of string, he tied it to a low branch so it hung upside down. Then, taking out his penknife, he flicked up the blade and slit its throat.
"Good Lord!" Nick stopped dead in his tracks. "That's a bit savage, isn't it?"
"Kindest way." Joey was dealing with the second in the same way.
"Can't eat 'em till they're dead."
"Are you going to eat them?"
"One of them. We might be able to sell the others. 3 good bucks, good for roasting."
"I think it's cruel," Nick said.
"No more cruel than shooting them," Lizzie defended.
"Better eating this way," Joey grinned. "They aren't full of lead shot. These two you caught, Nick, are not much good. One's an old doe, and the other is just a baby. Be all right in a stew."
Joey felt a glow of satisfaction. He'd learned all there was to know about ferrets from Harry Parry, and the ferret he'd got for himself was a good one. They'd not be short of rabbits for the pot. He'd also proved he could do something better than Nick Bender.
"It's no good being jealous of Nick," Lizzie had said to him more than once.
"Hard not to be. He's given everything he wants, isn't he? A bike and a pony?"
"Nick's all right. He lets you ride his bike."
"He lets you ride his pony."
"I like Nick," Lizzie said. "So do you, really?"
"He treats us like a couple of kids," Joey sniffed. "Thinks he knows more than we do."
"He ought to. He's nearly grown up."
Now Joey gloried in being able to teach Nick Bender how to rabbit, especially as he wasn't showing much aptitude.
"You aren't very practical," he said, putting two rabbits in one sack.
"Nick's kind to animals, too gentle for this," Lizzie said.
"He'd do it if he had to. You eat rabbit, don't you, up at your house?"
"Yes, sometimes. There's blood all over that sack," Nick said in disgust.
"Have to wash them in the river tomorrow," Joey told him. "It always happens."
"What are you doing now?" "Skinning this one, because we'll be eating it. Dad showed me how."
"Gosh, there's lots of things you can do," Nick said with admiration.
"It's all a bit messy, though.
Are you coming with us to the village to see if we can sell the other two?"
"What now?" Nick asked.
"Better while they're fresh. It's not late. We'll go as far as the shop and the pub."
"Come with us," Lizzie urged.
Joey wanted Nick to come with them, too. He and Lizzie could be treated with suspicion in the village. Nick would lend an aura of respectability to what they were going to do. Also, Joey was leading this expedition. It was good to have 16-year-old Nick towering over him, yet feel he was in charge.
Penner Clip was a straggling row of houses and cottages, only 10 minutes' walk down the road. Beyond that was an untidy collection of pens and yards, and a large building with a corrugated iron roof, where the weekly sales of sheep, pigs, and cattle took place. Amongst the cottages were the school, the Salem Chapel, and the Madron Arms. The village shop and post office had closed for the night several hours earlier, but Joey hammered on the door until the postmaster came in his shirt sleeves to loosen the bolts.
"We've got rabbits to sell," Joey told him. "Good big bucks. Plenty of eating on them."
"How much?"
9 pence each."
"You're a bit pricey, son."
6 pence to you, then. They're both young, should roast well."
"Been out poaching, have you?"
"Of course not," Nick said indignantly. "Caught on our land."
"I'll have that one, then."
The postmaster pulled a fistful of coins out of his pocket and picked out 6 pennies. Joey had already noticed the publican had come to the door of the Madron Arms.
"Want a rabbit, Mr. Jones?" he called as he ran across the road to him.
The others followed. A car was slowing down to avoid them.
"Oh, dear," Nick said, grimacing. "Those people are coming to our house for dinner. Hope they didn't see the rabbit."
"Sold them both," Joey was enthusing. "A whole shilling. I only gave 2 shillings for the ferret and his hutch. It's going to be a good earner."
The vehicle had stopped a short distance along the road. A voice called back,
"Do you want a lift home, Nicholas?"
Nicholas muttered under his breath,
"Hope they don't tell my dad about this," before breaking into a run.
"Can we have a lift too?"
Joey shouted after him, but the car moved off as soon as Nick was on the back seat. Nick Bender went slowly downstairs to the dining room. He didn't know why he spent all term looking forward to the school holidays. They always turned out to be a disappointment. The scent of bacon and the sound of his father's voice met him at the door. He knew his parents watched him warily as he pulled out his chair and sat down. Things had been difficult at home for some time. He'd heard them discussing him in the kitchen.
"Did you have to be so brutal about it?" his mother had complained. "He was so keen."
"Too keen," his father had said gruffly. "Always behind me asking questions. What type of oats do you sow, Dad? What's your yield? How many tons to the acre? And he wants to try his hand at everything."
"All he ever wanted was to help about the farm. I think you should let him. Give him something to do."
"The farm will be Jonathan's one day, Clarissa. You know it's entailed. It's kinder not to let Nick believe he can play any part in it."
"But to stop him going to agricultural college, he'd set his mind on it."
"You know Yarrow was mine only because I was the eldest son. It soured things between me and my brother all our lives. He would have made a good farmer too, maybe better than I am. He's always been so envious. I don't want that to happen to Nick. There's no way we could afford to get him another farm, and what future would he have farming for someone else?"
"Nick isn't the sort to be envious. He's such a kind-hearted, sensitive boy."
"He's young enough to develop other interests."
"But he doesn't know what he wants now."
At the beginning of the holidays, Nick always felt less at ease here than he did at school. His father was as strict as any master, and the rules were no fewer than at school, just different. Here in the country, nothing much seemed to happen.
"You're late, Nick," his father said.
"Sorry, Dad."
He reached across for the teapot. All the others had reached the toast stage.
"Tatty's keeping your breakfast warm in the oven," his mother said, an impatient note in her voice. "Run and get it, dear."
His egg yolk was solid. He wasn't hungry anyway.
"I didn't want to say anything in front of the Apleys last night, Nick, but I do think you should have more sense. Selling rabbits in the village like that."
"They weren't my rabbits. I was just there."
"Damn it, I know that."
"Sorry, Dad."
"What do you see in those O'Malley children?"
"Joey's got a new ferret. I wanted to see it work. Gosh, it did well."
"I wish you'd keep away from them. They're always up to some mischief."
"I have to have somebody to talk to."
He missed the perpetual companionship of the boys at school. "I'm not used to being by myself so much."
"You've got your own family."
"John and Hal don't want me tagging on, and Lucy hasn't broken up yet. Anyway, she's too young and only interested in dolls. The O'Malleys are even younger. His father's face condemned him. True. He shrugged his shoulders. But Lizzie doesn't seem so childish. She's not so wrapped up in toys and dresses. And part of the attraction for him was that the O'Malleys gave him a glimpse of a different way of life. One where meals were not important. They had a freedom he did not. Scruffy 12-year-old Joey was in charge of his life, a provider of meals for his family, just like an adult, while Nick, at 16, was still being treated like a child. "Perhaps you could invite your friend Johnson to come for a week," his mother suggested. "He's gone with his family to France. Isn't he lucky?" His father stared silently back at him. He'd explained often enough that summer was his busiest time, so they could never go away. Nick knew there would be no holiday trip. "If you won't let me help on the farm, and you don't like me rabbiting with the O'Malleys, it doesn't leave me much to do." "Since you seem to have time on your hands," his father said shortly, "I suggest you give some thought to what you want from life. Buck up your ideas. How are you going to earn a living?"
"I'd like to work with horses, Dad. I've told you."
"I'm afraid, Nick, dear," there was an edge to his mother's gentle voice, "working with horses poses the same problems as farming. A riding school would require a big investment, and we can't help you with it." Nick took a gulp of tea. They'd been through all this before. He had been putting his mind to it, and was eager now to try his latest idea on them.
"I wouldn't mind being a stable manager for a racehorse owner, or something like that."
"There's not much cash in that," his father said shortly.
"You might as well aim to be a farm manager, Nick," Clarissa said. "Your father is afraid you'll end up as a groom or a farm labourer."
"Why can't you make up your mind about what you want? Set yourself goals like Jonathan and Hal."
Dad was irritable. "I've never needed to make up my mind. I've always known I wanted to do farm work, or if not that, work with animals."
"We've been through all that, Nick, a dozen times. For you it isn't possible. We want you to have a decent career."
Nick studied his two brothers from under his lashes. One day Jonathan would inherit Yarrow. He'd not been pressured to make any choice. He'd wanted to become a vet and practice until father retired. He'd already sat his finals and was awaiting the outcome with every confidence. Hal was a medical student and hadn't thought of being anything other than a doctor from the time he was at school.
"Have you thought about being a vet like Jonathan?" His mother was smiling at him again. It wasn't the first time this had been put to him. He dismissed the idea again. He couldn't explain why, but he just didn't think he could.
"You mustn't drift, Nick."
That made him blink hard. Dad thought more highly of his brothers.
"Why don't you go out for a ride on Dando?" his mother suggested.
"Mother!"
He instilled as much scorn into his voice as he dared. "My feet practically touch the ground when I sit on her." He'd adored Dando once, but he'd grown out of her. She'd been bought for Jonathan, and they'd all learned to ride her in turn. If she had a fault, it was that her back was so broad it was difficult for a small child to get his legs across it. With her thick-set hind quarters and stocky legs, she had the shapeliness of a bed. As soon as he went into her field, Dando would amble over and put her soft, damp muzzle against his hand, and if she found that empty, would try to push into his pocket for the carrot or apple he usually took her. She had a rough coat, a flowing mane, and big, benign eyes, and was of a cross-breed that owed something to the Welsh cob. Nick thought of her with affection. She was so placid that at times she seemed to be sleepwalking. Very safe for a child's first mount, but not an exciting ride once the first skills had been mastered. Mostly she strolled at snail's pace, but she could be persuaded to trot for short distances. A canter was more difficult to achieve, and Nick had never seen her gallop.
"I forget you're growing up, Nick, and ride Shandy now. I won't be going out today."
Shandy was often between the shafts of his mother's trap, but he'd been allowed to ride her for some time.
"I've grown out of her too, Mother. I thought you were going to sell her and the trap."
"Soon," she said, "when I get a car."
Could I ride Caspar, Dad?
I suppose you're big enough to manage him. You'd like that?
I'd love it, Dad.
All right.
Permission was given only grudgingly.
Don't go off our own land for a week or so, until you get used to each other.
Nick nodded. He and Caspar were not complete strangers. Caspar was a lightweight hunter of nearly 15 hands. Once he'd been a very good jumper. Nick had ridden him over the last 2 holidays, and found him a more exciting ride than Shandy. The fact that he hadn't had permission meant he'd had to head off the farm when his father's back was turned. "Your father's thinking of buying another horse for himself." He felt his mother's eyes watching him.
"Caspar's getting old," his father said.
"Over 20, isn't he?" Nick spoke with his mouth full. "Not a lot of energy for hunting now. You need a stronger horse, Dad." His father turned to his 2 brothers.
"What are you planning to do today?"
Jonathan could drive and had a car, so they didn't have to hang about the farm all the time. But they wouldn't take Nick. They thought him too young to trail behind them round pubs, chatting up girls.
"Will I be allowed to ride the new horse?"
"No," his father said shortly. The new horse was huge, a 7-year-old gelding named Ambrose. He stood nearly 18 hands and had bounce in his step and a glossy black coat. He came in a horse-box a few days later and was made twitchy by the experience. Leo had decided it would be wise to stable him for a few days until he was used to his new surroundings. Nick soothed and settled him in, groomed him, gave him a feed of bran and oats, and brought Dando into the next stall for company. He couldn't leave the new horse alone. He'd never handled such a fine animal before, and he longed to ride him. The next day was bright and sunny, and it seemed a shame to keep Ambrose in the stable, now he'd had time to calm down. His ears were pricking backwards and forwards, and his eyes were bright. He looked alert and intelligent enough to cope with any difficulty he might encounter on the hunting field. Nick watched his father lead him to the field and turn him out with the other horses.
"I'll saddle him this afternoon and try him out," he said. "Haven't time now. I want to take those calves to market."
Nick had already seen Lizzie's fair head peeping through the hedge. Once his father was out of sight, she came running to get a better look.
"Isn't he a beauty?"
"Should be. He cost 25 guineas.
"Phew," Joey whistled. As usual, he was not far behind.
"You could have had 2 horses for that."
"I thought you said your dad wasn't rich," Lizzie piped up.
"The farm's done a bit better over the last few years."
His father didn't like to admit he was getting more prosperous, but Nick had noticed other signs. Joey's lopsided eyes smiled up at him.
"Just look at his muscles rippling. I bet he's wonderful to ride."
"You couldn't ride him."
"Course I could. You're too small for a horse like Ambrose."
"I can ride anything."
"He can," Lizzie confirmed.
"Who taught you?"
"You don't need lessons for things like that."
Joey's lip curled up in contempt.
"I get on and do it. Have you had a go yet?"
"No,"
Nick admitted, and felt again a pang of something near desire. He really wanted to. He watched Ambrose's head go down to the grass. At breakfast his father had held forth at great length about his choice of this particular horse. He needed a strong heavyweight hunter with plenty of stamina, because he himself was heavily built and getting heavier in middle age. He'd said he'd outgrown Caspar just as Nick had outgrown Dando and Shandy. And yet, he maintained, Ambrose was quite the wrong horse for Nick. Nick didn't agree, because he was almost as tall as Dad now. Okay, he'd be a little overhorsed, but that was no reason to forbid him to mount. And Joey O'Malley was stones lighter than he was.
"I know I can. Want me to show you?"
Joey took a homemade head collar of frayed rope from his pocket.
"Joey can ride that old black cow you've got," Lizzie said.
She wore her hair in plaits like the other O'Malley girls, but hers were really long and thick.
"You'll never catch him. He's still a bit skittish."
"Catch anything with a few oats, I bet you."
Nick grinned.
"Why not?"
He'd seen his mother settling down to some dressmaking, and the window of her sewing room faced the other way.
"Wouldn't mind having a go myself. Lizzie, be a good girl and make sure my father's gone. Then go and distract Tatty. She'll tell on us if she knows."
"Nick, I don't want to be left out. You and Joey are going to have all the fun."
"I'll make it up to you some other time," he promised.
"Now," she bargained, "I want to come too."
"All right, then." All Nick wanted to do was to ride.
"Where are you going?"
"Out on the common. Then go past the house."
Ambrose was easy to catch. Nick rattled a few oats in the bucket, and the horse came over and put his head in it. Joey slid the head collar on, and they had him. Nick was surprised to find how good Joey was with horses. He soothed and stroked Ambrose, talked to him until he seemed as placid as Dando.
"Let's take him back to the stable to saddle him," Nick said as he opened the gate.
When Ambrose came alongside, Joey shinned up the 5 bars and slid onto his back. Nick had seen him ride both Casper and Dando bareback. The horse walked slowly up the lane and back to his stall in the stable.
"I told you I could," Joey crowed as Nick was saddling up. "Nothing skittish about him. A smashing horse."
Nick agreed. It was a long pull up into the saddle, but he felt quite safe and in control once there. The next instant, Joey was up behind him.
"A big enough load for him now," he said into Nick's ear.
"You leave him to me," Nick ordered as he turned Ambrose into the lane.
As soon as they were out of sight of the house, they rode up and down the road, waiting for Lizzie.
"Nobody saw you go," she gasped as she came running up. "My turn, Joey. I want to ride. I've got a stitch in my side now."
"Come on, then, up in front," Nick said.
Joey had to give her a leg up, but she got there. She was grabbing handfuls of mane.
"Loosen up," he said. "Ambrose won't like that. I won't let you fall."
His arms, one each side of her waist, held her in position. He could see over her shoulder. Through the breeze fluttered wisps of white hair against his chin, tickling him, and sometimes the plaits rose and fell with the gait of the horse. He put Ambrose through his paces, from walk to trot and on to canter and gallop. They rode him together and separately, one or sometimes two running behind. He tried him at a few fences. Ambrose sailed over with ease. Nick gloried in it. The sun was warm on his face and the breeze blustered. He felt on top of the world.
"Dad's wrong," he said to Lizzie. "Course I can manage him. He's no harder than Casper. In fact, Casper can be a bit obstinate at times."
Nick was enjoying himself so much he forgot the time. It was his stomach that reminded him. He'd stayed out longer than he'd meant to, and travelled further. Lunchtime had come and gone. His euphoria vanished, leaving him cold and anxious. He wanted Ambrose safely back in the field before his father came home. With Lizzie up in front, Joey kept shouting to him to slow down so he could keep up. They tried 3 up, and Ambrose could still keep up a brisk canter. He slowed to a walk over the last mile, but when they dismounted in the stable and Nick pulled off the saddle, the horse was steaming and streaming with sweat. They both helped him. Joey picked out Ambrose's hooves while Lizzie used the sweat scraper and Nick rubbed him down. Once they had a light blanket on, they led him back to the field.
"I'd like to take the blanket off," Nick worried. "Don't want Dad to see it."
"Why don't you, then? He needs it on while he cools down. Can't risk him catching a chill. Another 10 minutes. He ought to have a feed of bran and oats, too.
Surely your dad will go in the house first. He'll want his dinner."
"We'll get him a bran mash," Nick decided. "He can have that, and we'll take off the blanket, so there'll be nothing to show."
They were walking back up the lane to the field when Nick heard footsteps behind them.
"It's Dart!"
His heart thudded with panic. All three took their heels along the grass verges.
"I'll grab the blanket," Joey panted.
"No," Nick hissed. "Clear off. And Lizzie, take this bucket of bran mash with you."
He leaned on the gate, trying to look as though he'd been there for an hour, but he was holding his breath until Lizzie turned the corner and was out of sight. It seemed only seconds before his father joined him.
"Hello, Nick. "You've got a blanket on, Ambrose?"
"Yes."
He was afraid his voice squeaked with guilt.
Were the flies bothering him?
Nick felt paralyzed. He didn't disagree.
No trouble catching him?
No, Dad.
Good. Tati says you haven't been in for lunch.
Wasn't hungry. His stomach gurgled a protest. To cover the noise, he said, "Have you had yours?"
"Of course. She's keeping yours hot if you want it."
"I'm not hungry." Guilt made him stifle his appetite. He couldn't leave the horse now.
"Thought I'd make time for a ride. Put Ambrose to his paces. Why don't you saddle Casper and come with me?"
He blamed himself. Nick knew he ought to tell his father that the horse needed rest and food. He tried to work out how many hours of vigorous exercise Ambrose had already had today. He was worried stiff, but Dad had been impressed with the horse's stamina. Perhaps he'd be all right. He didn't feel at all like another ride. Another fear was growing, that the horse would still be sweating when the blanket was removed. Ambrose was difficult to catch. Nick had to fetch some oats before they managed it. There was a sudden short shower, so although Ambrose's blanket was wet, it didn't occur to his father that it was sweat. He had to dry Ambrose off before he could be saddled. His father rode ahead, ramrod straight in the saddle, classically correct in his horsemanship. Nick felt taut with tension as he retrod the route he and Ambrose had travelled earlier. Ambrose seemed all right, though Nick thought there could be less bounce in his step than there had been. Out on the common, where the ground was firm and level, his father urged Ambrose into a gallop. Nick was careful to keep Casper well behind. Ambrose cleared a couple of ditches satisfactorily, and his father put him at a low wall. "He's good," his father called to him as Nick sailed over on Casper. He sounded pleased with his new horse. Nick told himself to ease up. It was going to be all right. The horse had stamina, hadn't it? They cantered on. He noticed Casper had no trouble keeping up. He seemed quite frisky. Nick wished he didn't feel so famished and exhausted. He felt the rain in his face again, and moments later it was coming down heavily. He felt Casper slide, but he regained his footing and carried on.
"Take care, the grass is slippery now it's wet," he called, "and where it's muddy it's worse."
His father's back was still ramrod straight in the saddle.
"Have we gone far enough, Dad? We're going to get soaked."
It seemed enough of an excuse to return, but his father had set Ambrose at a gorse thicket that provided a wider obstacle. Nick decided he was going round it. He was spent. He was concentrating on the rhythm of Casper's stride at the time and couldn't believe he was seeing Ambrose slip and flounder. He knew he let out a scream as his father was being thrown off. It all happened so quickly. He reined Casper to a sudden halt, slid down to the ground.
"You all right, Dad?"
He knew he sounded terrified, but his father was getting stiffly to his feet. He was splattered with mud, his face screwing with pain. Nick stood transfixed with guilt, both hands pressed to his mouth. The rain was driving in his face.
"What happened?"
"The horse," his father was shouting. "See to the horse." Ambrose was still floundering on the ground, churning it to mud, unable to get to his feet.
"Mind he doesn't kick you," he warned.
Nick's mouth was dry. What had he done? This was cataclysmic. He caught hold of the bridle and tried to encourage the horse to his feet. Went closer, grasped his noseband and heaved. Ambrose was trying to push himself up on his forelegs, but his back ones would not straighten under him. His father pushed him out of the way.
"Come on," he said to Ambrose. "Up you come."
He achieved only an anguished neigh. Nick was aghast. Ambrose's back legs would not take his weight. His father was running his hands over them, his face paper white.
"Could be broken, I suppose."
He was biting his lip, then gently feeling down the horse's backbone.
"Is it there?"
Nick felt rigid with horror.
"I don't know."
His father was taking off his jacket and spreading it over the animal to keep him warm.
"Get the vet here as soon as you can," his voice rasped out.
It was Leo who caught Casper's bridle and thrust Nick upwards into the saddle.
"Bring my gun, too, just in case."
The word gun made Nick sick with anxiety. This was worse than anything he'd imagined. He felt on fire. What he'd done this morning must have contributed to the accident. He felt a desperate urge to get it off his conscience.
"Dad," he said, blurting it out, "I've already ridden him. I..." "Get on with you. You're wasting time."
He dug his heels into Casper's ribs then and rode as hard as he could. It began to rain more persistently. The day took on a nightmare quality. When he reached home, he rode straight to the back door, yelling to his mother to ring for the vet. Then he shut himself in the downstairs lavatory to wipe the rain from his face and pull himself together. He didn't want to go back, but his father's gun was still in its cupboard when he looked. Casper had gone when he peered out in the yard.
"Jonathan said to tell you he'd taken him," said Tatty.
Nick started to walk, hardly able to drag one foot after the other. When eventually he got back to the scene of the accident, a crowd had gathered. Some of the farm workers, both his brothers, who happened to be home. The vet, even Lizzie and Joey O'Malley. Nick daren't look them in the eye.
"Broken his back,"
the words he'd dreaded. He wanted to put his hands over his ears to shut it all out. He was aware of Joey edging close on one side and of Lizzie snuggling against him on the other, her fair skin wet with rain. Then the onlookers were backing off. He saw his father raising the gun, his face rigid with anguish. Ambrose, his sleek black coat smeared with mud, was weaker now, but still making futile efforts to stand. The shot, when it came, reverberated through Nick's head. Lizzie was feeling for his hand. Joey was clinging to him. He shook them both off. He knew that if he didn't, he'd disgrace himself. The beautiful horse lay still at last. Everybody was turning away, going home. Nick followed blindly.
"Let's go to the stable," Joey whispered.
Nick shook his head and wished they'd go away. He never wanted to go to the stable again, never wanted to see another horse.
"How much did you say it cost, the horse?"
"Shut up.
How much? Tell me."
There was no shaking Joey O'Malley off. Nick felt ill. The adults ahead were moving at funeral pace, and he didn't want them to hear.
25 guineas, he muttered. "Shooting it just like that? I can't believe anybody would shoot 25 guineas worth."
"Don't you understand? He wasn't worth anything. He'd broken his back. We helped to do it, Joey. All of us."
"You didn't tell him?"
He saw the tip of Joey's tongue moisten his lips.
"I tried, but I don't think I ought to."
"Don't be daft. He thinks it's his own fault." Joey forced a laugh.
"Don't you dare. He'd half kill us."
"He was riding it himself," Lizzie protested. "Better if he doesn't know."
"He doesn't mind wasting 25 guineas.
Joey's strange eyes glittered up at Nick.
"He shot it without turning a hair."
"He minds terribly," Nick said through clenched teeth. "See how stern he is."
"He's talking to the vet as though nothing terrible has happened. He must be rich to spend that sort of money on a horse in the first place."
It caught his eye. It was an extravagance, a rare indulgence, if you like, Nick said miserably.
"That's what I mean," Joey said. "Then to shoot it the very next day, that's being really rich. One day I'm going to have money like that."
"Don't be stupid." Nick felt crushed and could take no more from Joey. "When you're 14, your dad will find you a place as a farm boy. You'll be a farm labourer just like him. A tied cottage and 30 shillings a week."
"I'll ask Mr. Bender to take you on here."
Lizzie let go of Nick's arm and rushed to support Joey.
"He took on Harry Parry."
"He won't take me." Joey shook his head. "He thinks I'm not strong enough, and I get sick too often, and he doesn't like my dad. Anyway, I want to work in a big city. That's where you can get rich, isn't it, Nick?"
Lizzie sighed. "I don't know how you'll do it."
"I'll do it somehow. Other people do."
"Not people like you."
Nick was exhausted. He'd no more patience with Joey. He was boasting like the silly child he was.
"I'll do it, Lizzie," Joey vowed. "I'll work till I drop. I'm going to do it for you. We're going to be rich one day."